Welcome back.
So you've made it this far, hopefully, or maybe you're picking up, interested in what we're going to do with app development. In the interim, I'm still Christopher Harrison.
And I am Susan Ibach.
So and
we've been spending the day talking about some of the new features in Visual Studio 2013. We've talked about some of the features in the development environment. We've talked about some of the stuff specific to web. We've talked about some of the stuff. I'm getting the feeling you like web. And some of the stuff for Team Foundation Server. So we're going to finish up talking about some of the new features that are out there specifically for app developers.
Excellent. Let's have at it.
Yeah. Now, app development, we're talking about Windows 8 and Windows Phone app development specifically, we're going to get into, which is interesting because it touches on a lot of different technologies. Because, of course, you can build a Windows 8 using XAML and C#, XAML and VB. You can do it with HTML JavaScript. So we've got different choices, DirectX and C++. Then we have tools like Blend, which are used by a lot of application developers as well. And before all you Visual Studio junkies like me go, Blend, because I certainly know most people who grew up on Blend are still a little intimidated by, grew up in Visual Studio, are sometimes just a little hesitant to enter Blend.
I'll admit it, I'm a bit hesitant to enter Blend.
Yeah, so it's one of those ones I do encourage you to go play with it, and I'll show you some of the new stuff that's in Blend. Even if you have always worked inside Visual Studio, there are going to be times when you really want to go play in Blend. You'll be surprised by what it can do. We'll talk a bit about Azure Mobile Services, some of the new features specifically for JavaScript, because we also got some specifically for XAML. And then a couple of neat little additions. There's the energy consumption, performance, and debugging tool. And there's a little toolkit I want to show you as well, which I think is really important if anybody's building apps and putting them out there in the store, called the Multilingual App Toolkit.
Excellent.
So that's what we're going to go play around with.
Let's go take a look.
Because, you know, web is your happy place, apps is my happy place.
Yep.
All right, so let's start by taking a look at some of the new features that are out there specifically for XAML developers. So we've got a few things in there, and again, this is really a case almost of the XAML editor catching up a little bit with where we are used to in the past being within our .NET environment. So we've got better IntelliSense than we did before, code snippets, yay, love code snippets, start and end tag refactoring, go-to definition, again, just a case of catching up, and nested comments. This is one of those things in Visual Studio 2012. If you're developing XAML, you were kind of beating your head against the wall. Yay! There's been some fixes there as well. So again, when it comes to things like this, it's a lot nicer to take a look at it than it is to talk about it.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's just get into it.
Yeah. Yep. So I'm going to go and launch some Visual Studio here and go into a phone application that I built. And being a runner, this is my phone app that is I'm using to calculate my speeds on treadmills and how fast I need to run my races.
Runners understand this dilemma.
This world we live in.
Yes, especially if you bounce back and forth between the U.S. and Canada.
Miles and kilometers, it gets very confusing.
Yeah.
So if we just go take a look, I just want to point out, get down to some of our buttons and so on. It's a very, very simple application with a few buttons. We've got a new improved IntelliSense inside XAML. So that's improved considerably. So there are some simple things we can do. Let's say I want to add another stack panel to my form. So I start adding stack, and poof, you can see the IntelliSense finally popping up the way we would all expect it to choose stack panel. So that's not that new and exciting. I mean, it's good news. But what I like is the fact that they've really given us the full IntelliSense capabilities. So as a simple example, and this is one of those things I do all the time, if you accidentally type it lowercase, that's okay. IntelliSense is still smart enough to pick it up, so you don't have to worry about it being case sensitive. The other thing that's kind of cool is if you type in part of the word. Sometimes I type too fast. When my right fingers go faster than the left fingers or whatever, and I skip a letter.
Yep.
You'll notice it can still be fast and smart enough to recognize I want a stack panel.
Oh, nice. So you got typos, transpose things.
A little fuzzy logic built into that, so that I can do it. And if you are, if you used it in .NET, we had that camel casing sensitivity.
Yep.
So you could just type for stack panel, you know, SP for stack panel.
Nice.
Or TV for text block and so on like that. So we've got all that sort of IntelliSense all built right in. So full IntelliSense support now inside the XAML. Plus it even supports if you've got data binding defined inside your inline, you can actually even, the data binding will even be picked up by the IntelliSense. And some of the style definitions will even be picked up by your IntelliSense as well.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, so it makes life a lot easier. Another thing that's really cool, and I was very excited about this when I first saw it, was code snippets. Now,
yay, code snippets.
Yes, code snippets are good. Anything that saves Susan typing makes her happy. I am a lazy coder. That's basically what I am. Now, what's funny, though, is when I first got Visual Studio 2013, and I went and I did a right click, and I said, well, let's just insert a snippet. Mm-hmm. And there were no snippets.
Oh.
So the insert snippet functionality was there, but there were actually not any actual snippets installed in Visual Studio. So one of the things I've included in the slide deck is a link to where you can download from Code Project a whole bunch of code snippets. So when you go, and that's what I've done on this one, so when I click insert snippet, you're going to see something listed. But I just wanted to point that out so that if you were to go in there, you'll be able to see it. So if you go in and you don't see any code snippets, you just need to go to Code Project and download them. And I can go in here, and this is a Windows Phone app, so I might say, whoops, little clicking a little too fast there. Insert snippet, Windows Phone 8. And maybe I want to add a list box style. Or I wanted to find a new button style. I told you I like to make things ugly. So I'm going to add a new button style. And boom, I've gone off and created myself the syntax for button style.
Nice. That's
so,
awesome.
Said nothing groundbreaking. It's just a nice when working in XAML gives us the same functionality that we're used to when we're working inside the other code editor environments.
Yep.
So some nice little stuff in there. Here's another one that I really, really like, though. Let's say I have a text box that I go off and define. And I close that tag. And I start working on my code, and I go, oh, I didn't mean to create a text box. I wanted to create a text block. Notice as soon as I change it to text block, the end tag is automatically updated.
Nice.
One less typo for me to go searching for later.
And one of the little things, by the way, is that that also, and it's been there at least since 2012, might have been back there in 2010 as well, but that does work inside of
HTML
as well. And what's really nice about it inside of HTML, go real quick with another keyboard shortcut, Control-K, Control-S. Is the surround with shortcut for your snippet. And so what that will do is it will then prompt you, okay, well, what tag? You could actually then go in, choose like HTML, and go with maybe like div. So then you surround everything with a div. Well, because of the fact that it fixes, it doesn't really matter what it is that you choose, because you choose div, and then you go, well, I really wanted that to be a span. Fine. Then you just change it to be a span, or you change it to be whatever it is that that you want. So it's a little feature, but it's one you're going to find yourself reaching for constantly.
Yeah. It's those ones you just, you do it without thinking after a while.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah.
So start and end tags, automatically updating and refactoring. Another thing is the go-to definition. Go-to definition, the old F12 key, we love using it for things like going to code, but what is also nice is then you've got things like styles.
Yep.
Even if they're off and buried in, you know, somewhere else in another file.
As they always are.
As they always are. All these nested styles, you can right-click on that, you can go to definition, and poof, you will go off and actually see where that style's been defined. So when you're mucking about trying to figure out why is this not appearing the way I want it to appear, you don't have to go searching. Very easy. Right-click, find your style definitions as well. That will also work to go look up where user controls have been defined as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, user controls and types will also work in terms of go-to definition. So said always useful because we typically have a lot of different files defining all our different styles.
Yes.
Usually some project standards document that somebody's created for us. And now here's one other thing that is one of those little things that was like just really irritating when you worked in 2012. And that is the fact that if you highlighted this chunk of code in 2012, and you decided to comment out this code, mm-hmm. and you hit the comment button, the code that got created was syntactically incorrect. It would actually come up with a compiler error because you had comments within the code you were commenting out.
Yep.
So you couldn't put comments around code that contained comments. They fixed it. Yay! So it will now create successfully comment out a chunk of code that contains a comment. However, this is the part that makes me go, yay! Okay, well, there's a yay, and there's a, okay, next service pack, let's hope, next update. Because the problem is when you uncomment it, it uncomments everything.
So it's not like we saw earlier with the single and just undoes each layer.
No, so they fixed the comment for inline nested comments, but the uncomment for nested comments is still got a little tweak to it. I wouldn't call that an undocumented feature, but hopefully it's progress. And so obviously I just have to be a little bit careful. So just, I wanted to warn you about that because if you uncommented a big chunk of code, you just want to be aware of that and be a little careful when you're uncommenting the code. But nested comments through your keyboard shortcut, or which was Control-K, C.
Control-K, Control-C.
Control-K, Control-C, or through the menu item. Great little feature.
So All right. I don't know how I survive without that Control-K, Control-C.
Yeah, it's one of those awesome things. Let's pop back to the slides again. Let me just bring this up.
You got to do the slide dance.
Do a slide dance. Dun-dun-dun. Go into the slides. All right. So there's the link to those code snippets I promised, because when you install Visual Studio 2013, by default, you'll go insert snippet. There'll be nothing there. So there's a nice set of snippets you can download from CodePlex. And there's a nice blog post from the Visual Studio team, actually, that summarizes all the different features that they've changed in the XAML editor for you. Now, Blend said, I know a lot of people who sort of grew up in Visual Studio, coding in Visual Studio, are a little intimidated by Blend, but it's an incredible tool. And I actually have a coworker of mine who actually spent some time, and he'd never opened Blend. And he was one of those things, he's like, I really should learn Blend. I should really learn Blend. So he gave himself a challenge. He decided to build an entire app using only Blend. Never actually using Visual Studio.
I'm still scared.
Yeah, it said it was a really interesting challenge for somebody who's used to working in Visual Studio to challenge himself to do that, and he did it in a day.
Okay.
Now he was not building. It wasn't a flashlight app. It was a little better than that.
Okay.
It's actually a fortune cookie app. I think it might even be in the store, because he wanted to make sure it would actually be valid and would pass certification.
Does it do the fortune of help? I'm trapped in a fortune cookie factory.
Yes.
Okay. Excellent.
So what happens is, you have this graphic, and opens a little fortune cookie, and it's like a magic eight ball of fortune cookies, sort of. App.
Okay.
Neat little thing. But he did the whole thing inside Blend. So Blend really is quite a powerful tool. It's not just a tool for design. The user interface.
Okay.
Right? You can actually define actions in within Blend as well.
Okay.
So you can really do a lot within Blend. So, but I do want to show, I'm not going to do you a whole intro to Blend here. I do actually have a link though in a couple of slides which will actually tell you, show you a blog post of the story of his trying to build something in Blend coming as a Visual Studio developer.
Yep.
And some references in case you want to learn how to get started in Blend. But said, we're not doing a getting started in Blend, we're doing what's new in Visual Studio.
Right.
So what I'm going to do here is focus in on what did they change and add in Blend for 2013. So there are some nice changes to the rulers and the guides, nice functionality, great when you're designing layout. If you're one of those people, everything's got to be lined up just right. You got standards of widths and things for your controls, some improvements to the device panel, because with Windows 8.1, there's some changes in terms of how an app appears on the screen, for example. And some neat stuff with CSS. CSS, you can do some cool animations using just CSS. And it can almost look 3D.
Yes.
There are some games out there. World's Biggest Pac-Man.com is actually an HTML CSS game, and it's done entirely HTML CSS. Atari actually re-released, speaking of great 80s references, Centipede and all their games have been re-released with HTML CSS. They're using CSS animations to do that. But even if you're not building games, adding some nice animations and some of the CSS capabilities is a really nice sort of add-on to add a little punch to an app or to anything you're building. So let's go take a look at what they have done inside Blend. Now, for this particular one, I'm actually going to go in. I'm going to open a slightly different project here. I could probably do it in this one. It'll be all right. And I'm going to take this project, and I'm just going to right-click on that project, and I'm going to say open it up in Blend. And now we don't need to save the changes. I've just been messing around. And we open up Blend 2013. So first of all, let's take a look at the changes they've made to the rulers and the guides. First of all, this is such a simple thing. If you click on the edge in the ruler, you can actually drag guides onto your screen and sort of help you plan the layout of your form. So you can go and you can create as many lines as you want, sort of define grids and make sure everything's neat and tidy. And you'll notice when you highlight one of the individual rulers, one of the things you can do is you can see their position. So I can see that this one is 190 pixels down on the screen, and I can even change whether when I align to it or snap to it, if it's bottom or top aligned, and I can delete different grid lines as well. You can delete them by clicking delete here, or you can simply drag them right back up to the top again, and that will achieve the same thing. One of the other things that's interesting about this, and this was actually a very big deal for a lot of people who are trying to make really nicely sort of said lined up things.
Right.
When you add a control to an app, typically the control has an actual size and a visual size. Because when you're building apps, typically people are touching. It's very touch target sensitive.
Right.
So even though you draw a button that looks like it's only, you know, 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter, the control itself is actually slightly wider than 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter because it's got this boundary area around the visual part of the control that allows you to make sure it's going to be a suitable size for a touch target when someone taps. So when you are using and you are trying to line everything up on the screen, typically the problem was it always snapped to the edge of the boundary of the control, the actual size of the control, not what the user saw. So you can imagine being that perfectionist, trying to make things line up just right and just being frustrated. You basically couldn't use snap properly because it always snapped to the boundary of the control, not the visible part of control.
Right.
So if I actually drag a ruler line down here, because the radio button's a great example of this. So let's say I take this here, and I take my radio button. You'll notice when I try to snap it, notice it gives me a snap point, which is the edge of a circle.
Okay.
Or I can snap at the edge of the boundary. So there's the visual part of the control, or the boundary of the control.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So that's going to make it a lot easier for, said, those perfectionists to do the snapping. So you can now snap to a visual part or to the boundary of the control. Love
Excellent.
That. The other thing I want to point out is while that control is selected, if you actually take a look at the ruler at the top there, and I'll just try and zoom in on that a little bit. There we go. Up at the top there, what you can see, it's shift, isn't it, and zoom it, Christopher?
There you go.
That's not the right one.
Oh, what do you want?
I wanted to draw a rectangle. What is that one?
Oh, control.
All right, control. There we go. So what I want to point out is right up here. Is the fact that you can see that the control starts 298 pixels from the left.
Okay.
And I can see the total width of the control is 160 pixels.
Yep.
So again, when you're getting nitpicky and you're trying to make sure that those two buttons really are the same size, being able to highlight a control and then look at the rulers, either vertically or horizontally, and you can see the exact size of a control, how many pixels they are in from the right, in from the left, total width, really going to help you a lot with your math as you're working around. You'll see the same thing on the rulers on the left-hand side. So again, nice when you just kind of clean up your design, make it look nice. What you may discover is, depending if you're building a lot of different apps that have similar layouts, you may actually get to a point where you have some standard guides that you always have set up. So that your exit button's always in the same place, or your search results always look the same sort of grid type format, nice and tidy. We like to have a similar look and feel. So if you set up all the guides the way you want to, one of the things you can do is you can actually go to View, Manage Guides, and you can actually save the guides that you've set up.
Okay.
And so the next time you come back, you can just simply load up those same guides again. So you can use them across multiple projects once you've got it set up the way you want. If you actually choose Load Guides now, there are actually some predefined ones that you can use. These are really designed to help with Windows 8 apps, though, so they're going to look a little silly on my Windows phone, but I'll just pick one. Let's say the group detail page. You'll see a lot of lines. But that's designed, it's designed for a Windows 8 app rather than for a Windows phone app.
I'm just trying to picture using a Windows phone app that controls like 3 pixels wide. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. So anyway, but these are really handy. And by the way, if you do accidentally add way more than you want, there is the ability to just go manage guides and clear them all as well. So when you accidentally have too many, you can clear them all out of there. One of the other things that's happened as well is there have been some nice changes to the device panel as well. So when you're working with Windows 8 apps, this is actually quite a big deal. I'm actually going to go and open another project now. Let's go find...
I got to tell you, now that you've told me about the whole Artari thing, that's going to take away so much productivity.
Oh, wait till you find World's Biggest Pac-Man. That's an even more dangerous one to know about than the other one is. That's really dangerous. I have spent so much time on World's Biggest Pac-Man. All right, so I'm going to open up a Windows 8 app inside Blend. So it's going to look a little bit different. And we'll go here. And we'll open that. Whoops, project. And open that in Blend.
I like that just real quick right-click and open in Blend. And for those of you not familiar, while Susan's bringing this up, one of the neat things about Blend is the fact that the project file and the solution file are the exact same format as they are inside of Visual Studio. So it's the exact same project. So if you do have people who have the talent that Susan and I don't have, which is making apps look pretty, chances are they're going to feel much more comfortable in Blend than they will inside of Visual Studio. So they can actually do everything inside of Blend. They can take advantage of source control and do everything inside of the tool that they're going to be much more comfortable with. And then as we go and we write our code and we do our things inside of Visual Studio, we're opening up the exact same project files, the exact same SLN files, the exact same, obviously, C-sharp or XAML files as well.
Exactly. And you can even do previews of the apps right inside Blend as well.
Yep.
So they can see not only how does it look in the designer, but they can do live previews of it well and interact with the app as well. Now, one of the things is when you are in Windows 8, one of the challenges of building Windows 8 apps is they're going to be running on little tablets, and they're going to be running on PCs at home and dual monitors. If, you know, developers like us, we tend to be running them with dual monitors in high definition.
How do people survive without dual monitors?
I cannot imagine. And one of the things you really need to do when you design a good app is you need to make sure it's going to look at those good on those small screens and yet also look good on those really big screens.
Yep.
So one of the things we have is they've actually changed some of the options in the device panel from what we had in 2012. First of all, they've split up display and orientation. It used to be sort of combined. So I can simply go, what's it going to look like portrait? If I have a tablet and I flip it, right, how is my app going to look there?
Cool.
Or let's say this is on a 7-inch tablet. Okay, I've designed it for a really small tablet. How is that going to look when I'm on a great big, nice 27-inch monitor? So I can see sort of how the white space is going to follow. If you've got graphics, you can make sure that the resolution on those graphics is going to be good and so on. So this said it really can make the difference between an app that does well across all these different devices. It's something you really want to think of when building for something like Windows 8.
Absolutely.
Now, one of the other things that you can do, I'm just going to go back to the 7-inch here, which is sort of typical ratio, sort of widescreen style time style.
Sure.
The other thing that changed was when we had Windows 8 apps versus 8.1 apps, we used to have SnapView. Right? SnapView, you would take an app and you would snap it to the side, and it always took 320 pixels wide, and you had to make sure your app supported this SnapView. And what we did in Windows 8.1 is the idea of running two apps at the same time on a tablet or on a screen is certainly something people wanted, but what came back very quickly as feedback was people wanted to be able to control the size, and people wanted to be able to run more apps. So in Windows 8.1, when you build an app for a Windows 8.1 platform, users can have different widths when they snap it. Mm-hmm. It's not really a snap view anymore. It's more just a partial screen view. And people can have up to three apps at the same time, which is interesting because it means your app could be in the middle. And thinking about how's my app going to look when it's in the middle is an interesting thing to consider.
Yep.
So that's another thing that is when you're thinking about design, about layout, you want to plan how's it going to look with those different views.
Yep.
So you can go here. We're an edge view, which means we're looking at it from edge to edge. And I'll just zoom in here so you can see what I'm see this one. So we've got this these options here. You said control, was it, for drawing rectangles?
Yes.
All right. So there are my different choices to navigate between my different views. So I want to see what's it going to look like if my app's the one on the left, mine is the one on the right, or the one in the middle.
Oh, nice.
So if I click on those different buttons, you can see all the different ways that my app's going to appear for the different ways a user may be running it.
Just like that.
You'll also notice the minimum width has been changed to 500 pixels. It used to be 320. That was SnapView.
Mm-hmm.
If you have Windows 8 apps that you're bringing up to Windows 8.1, you can certainly go and change the minimum width back to 320 to simplify design and rework as you bring it to 8.1 as well. So you can put it back to 320 if you wish. All right, so that's sort of some neat stuff on the device panel. And now I want to have a little fun, though. Sometimes, you know, we've been doing all these kind of demos. Sometimes I just like to do goofy demos.
Okay.
It's a useful feature, but I got to have some fun with the demo after a while.
All right.
So I'm going to go, and I am going to, I'm going to go to Paint. Because I like, make. I told you I'm good at making beautiful, elegant drawings. And
yes. Okay,
so
here we
let's
go.
Make something
yellow.
I'd
be really interested to see this.
And yellow. Okay. And let's make a nice big circle. Yep. There we go. Except I want that filled in. Let's fill that in. There we go. Nice big circle.
Okay.
And then I'm going to...
The sound effects help?
Absolutely. Sound effects make all the difference in the world.
Uh-huh.
So then I'm going to do some drawing, and we're going to make a little... oh, hang on. I need black would help. Change that to black. Please. Hey, why won't you change that? Pen. Ah, I need to tell it what I'm changing. What's going on here? Really? Now I can't draw. Pretty sad, pretty frustrating when you're playing around in. So let's go with a brush here and let's make that brush black or blue or green. There we go. I don't know why I didn't like the black. So I'm going to go here, and I'm going to basically
I think it was
make,
because it was your secondary color already.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that's true. It didn't want both the secondary. Yes. So I'm going to go, and I'm going to make this lovely, lovely little happy face.
By the way, in case anybody is curious, yes, this is Windows 8.1, and yes, paint is still there.
Oh, yeah. You can't take away paint. That would just be wrong. So I'm going to save this image, and I'll just save it on my desktop somewhere nice and simple so I can find it, and this will be my happy face. Save. All right, so I've got this incredibly beautiful graphic that I want to include in my application.
That's a happy face, not a poker face. That's something different.
Yes. And I'm going to go in here, and I'm going to create a brand new project.
Yep.
And I'm going to create myself a nice Windows Store app, just a blank one to start.
Okay.
And what I'm going to do...
Your content, by the way, goes right there.
My content goes there, just in case I wasn't clear on where to put it. All right. One of the new things I do need to do is I'm going to need to add that to my project images folder. So that is under, go to my project, go to images, and I'm just going to go add that lovely happy face to the collection of images I can choose from.
Yep.
And I'm not an action, thank you. A new item, oh no, it was a new item. It's an existing item I actually want. And on my desktop, I should be able to find my incredibly stunning happy face. And then I'm just going to drag that little happy face over here. So now I have this incredible, gorgeous app, which has a happy face on it.
Yes.
Right. Okay, now this is where some of the new features start to come in. So what I want to do is I want to animate this.
Okay.
Now, animations, as I said, there's some powerful things you can do with CSS and animation, but it is one of those things that can be sometimes difficult when you're trying to design it, because you're sort of going, okay, when it's done, I'm going to have it skewed at this degree, I want to have it this position, but you're always kind of having to run it over and over again to make sure that it came out the way you wanted to. So there's some wonderful new features to not only help you create your animation, but also help you test your animation. So that's what I want to take a look through here. Now, I do have notes because I got to make sure I go to the right menu items to do this. So let's select our image. And we're going to go to the CSS properties because, of course, it's the CSS properties that are going to animate our object. Once we get in there, I'm going to go to the inline style choices because that's where I can control it. And you will see, sure enough, that I have an option of animation. So I'm going to add a new animation, and I'm going to call it Fly Be Free. All right. So I've got a brand new animation that I've created here. And this animation is going to take maybe 2 seconds to run, you know, so the total time for the animation to occur will be 2 seconds. I'm going to put it on an iteration count of infinite. That just means it's going to run over and over and over again. If you specified 5, it would do it 5 times, one time. By the way, another nice little thing they fixed in Visual Studio 2013 is the fact that we have drop-downs here. In 2012, you had to remember what to type in, so I would make typos when I was typing infinite. And so I like the fact that I can just choose that from a drop-down now. I'm also going... It was always ETE or ITE. Then I go to the play state, and I'm going to say, initially, I want it to be running. So as soon as I start up the app, I want this animation to happen.
Okay.
So I've got this all set up. So duration, my iteration count, and my play state done. Then I choose this little edit animation button. Now, when I do this, watch the bottom of the screen. Right now, you see this code window. But as soon as I hit that, a new pane is going to show up.
Oh, cool.
This is called the animation pane. And this is what's going to allow me to preview and actually look at how my animation is going to work.
Okay.
So now that I've got that animation pane, what I want to do is I'm actually going to specify how I want my object to look when the animation is finished.
Okay.
So I'm going to change the timeline, and I'm actually going to drag it over to just around 2 seconds.
So you're just kind of putting together the storyboard here.
Yeah,
this is
exactly
what you want to have happen. Okay.
Right. So at the end of my 2 seconds, what do I want it to look like?
Right. Yep.
Right. So I set my time, and then I'm going to go, and I'm going down here, a little further down. Got to go all the way down to transform in the choices. And I'm going to pick the transforms that I want to happen to the animation when it arrives in that new location.
Okay.
So what do I want it to look like when I'm done? So I can go here, and let's add some additional transforms. So I'm going to add, let's do a translate, which means I'm going to move it. So let's move it. Nice for this way off the bottom of the screen here. It makes it fun. And let's move it over by 100 pixels and down by 100 pixels. So you can actually see on the screen, you can see it moving around and to the new location. Actually, let's move it a little more than that just because that's not very far. 300 to 300.
It'd be a very slow moving face.
Yeah, for 2 seconds.
Chugga, chugga, chugga,
absolutely.
Chugga, chugga, chugga.
And then maybe I add another transform, and this is going to skew it, so to make that sort of tilted sort of effect. Mm-hmm. And let's skew it by like 30 degrees and 30 degrees.
Okay.
So now it's starting to look a little more a little more warped, if you will, having some fun with it. So now what's cool is I can now go here and notice how I can preview how the animation is going to look all the way from my zero up to the 2 seconds.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
And or I can just hit the play and I can watch the animation going over and over again because I set it to infinite.
Yep.
And just sort of see how that animation plays itself out. And of course, if you were to run the app as well, yeah, just use F5 when all else fails.
There you go.
Yep. Still works.
And so what's nice about that is that you didn't actually go in and modify any CSS, any XAML, nothing. You just said, here, this is what I want to have happen, and it just created everything for you. I'm just loving that that whoosh effect there.
Absolutely.
I think that's fantastic.
So, yeah. So exactly. It said, and is that ability to preview it and make sure it's coming out the way I want to is even better. Mm-hmm. Now, even more than that, I said, it's amazing what you can do in Blend. I could now say, you know, I don't want that to happen automatically. I only want it to happen when you click on it.
Okay.
So
seems
I
fair.
Want to add a behavior. I actually want to control when this animation occurs.
Have it kind of run away from the mouse.
Yeah, it's exactly. Have it run away. Yes, my little happy face is going to be trying to escape.
Run away, run away.
So what I'll have to do is I'm just going to have to stop the animation recording here. Da-da-da. All good. All right, let's turn that off. So I just click on the little button to turn off the animation recording. Mm-hmm. So it knows I'm just going in to do edits now. And what I'm going to do is go back to my animation, and I'm just going to change the iteration count here back to 1, because it's only going to be on a click. It's probably when I click, you just do it once.
Yeah.
And initially, it's going to be paused.
Okay.
Because the idea is nothing's going to happen until I click.
Mm-hmm.
So now that I've done that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to behaviors. So over here on the left-hand side, there is a tab, and I'll click on that, and we'll zoom in a little here. So under assets, I can go in here, and this is where I'm going to go add the behavior that I want. So I'm going to go down to assets, underneath behaviors, and then I'm going to choose the option to set a style action, because what I'm doing is I'm changing one of the style attributes when they do the click behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So let's do that, and you'll notice on the right-hand side, I now have this option, but I can go in, and I can set what is the style action that I actually want to do. So the style action I actually want to occur over on the right-hand side of the screen. Yeah, didn't mean to do that. Sorry. Ah. Shoot. Sorry about that. That's not what I was after. Go ahead. Set style action, please. There we go. And you can just be deleted. Remove that behavior. Okay. So I go to set style action, and I want to change the property, which is my play state, because I'm basically going to change the play state from paused to running.
Okay.
So I'm going to change the value to running. Now, of course, somehow it has to know when does this occur,
mm-hmm.
and that's actually determined by the event trigger behavior here. So if you actually or look at the triggered actions, that's where you can go and you can control if it's on a click event or a double click or what the action is that you want it to occur on.
Okay.
All right. So now if we run it, because this one you can't really preview the same way because you have to have an action to do it. What should happen is we'll see the app come up and running, but the happy face is just going to sit in the corner until I click on it to make it go.
And then it runs away from your mouse.
And then it runs away. But again, all this in Blend, and I'm creating actions and things like that,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't use Visual Studio. It's amazing what you can do in Blend.
And
don't think of it as just a silly way of doing animations. Imagine mm-hmm. that, you know, you've got users who are looking at warehouse stock and you're moving stock from one warehouse to another. How animations really bring applications to life for a user.
I'll always remember I saw a study once that what they did was they took two apps that had the exact same bugs, the exact same functionality. They made one of them very, very pretty. They made the other one just very simple, basic. But again, the two apps were the same. They had the same bugs and the same functionality. And what they found was that the people who used the ones that was very pretty, they were much more forgiving when there were things like errors and otherwise, and they had, you know, much higher level of user acceptance. The one that was very basic, they really just slammed and didn't like, because they just kind of assumed, oh, well, this is very basic. It must not have been put together very well.
Yeah.
So those little animations, I know it sometimes seems very silly to us, but to your users,
yeah.
It does make a very big deal.
It can affect acceptance,
yeah,
as I said, and how willingness people are to
yep.
use some features
yeah.
and to use your application. All right, so those are some of the new features in Blend. Let's hop back to the slides again. And let's take a quick look. There's a few links here for you to find you some resources both on the new features in Blend. And I said, if you've never played with Blend before, there's a nice blog post there on GoDevMental about Visual Studio developers' first experience trying to use Blend. And let's take a look at Azure Mobile Services. Now, let me be clear. Azure Mobile Services is not a new feature in 2013. This has been around for a while. Azure Mobile Services is a fantastic set of features that you can use. And what's great about them is that they work not only as a backend for Windows 8 apps and Windows Phone apps, they also work on iOS apps. They also work on Android apps. So one of the problems every mobile developer faces is that constant battle of having to support all these different platforms. So when I can have some code and I can put it out in the cloud somewhere and reuse that same code for the iOS version, the Android version, the Windows Phone version, and the Windows 8 version, that's always going to be a big win for me because that's going to save me a lot of time. So I love Azure Mobile Services simply because I can use it in all these different places. We use Azure Mobile Services for things like push notifications. So I can, you know, notify a user when there's a storm coming to their area on a weather app. Or I could use it for authentication because I want people to log into my app. I still want someone to build me the ultimate gift registry app so I can talk to my family and we can put our gift wish list on it and I can see what others want and they can add to their wish list. I want that app. Someone wants to build that. If you want to build it, let me know when it's done. I want that. I do have some specific feature requests, though, so you might have to talk to me first.
Actually, talk to me afterwards.
All right, we'll talk.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
But it would need to have data stored in the background because, of course, when my mom logs in, she needs to see the wish list that I added. And I need to be added to my son's wish list. So we're all going to be sharing data, and we're all going to need to log in because I have to make sure you see the right lists. Mm-hmm. So again, so user authentication is supported by Azure Mobile Services. Data is supported by Azure Mobile Services as well. So lots of great features it supports. Set. Mobile services isn't new. What is new is the fact that it's much easier now to work with Azure Mobile Services from within Visual Studio. So it's the integration between Visual Studio and the mobile services themselves that's improved. So it's going to save me, much like we were taking a look at in the web one, we were seeing how you could manage your Azure websites from directly within Visual Studio.
Yep.
Same sort of thing with the mobile service as well. So we've seen much greater integration of Visual Studio with the Azure Management Portal. So let's cut over and I'll show you how you can do that. By the way, just in case you haven't accessed Azure, there is a slide in here which gives you some tips on where you can get access to Azure as well. So let's go do a quick demo. Okay, so I'm going to go off back to my machine, and I believe I have over here somewhere. No, that's my copy of, I don't know if that is it. Is that the one? No, not Blob. I was after a different project. And where was that project? The one I was looking for.
No, it's in there. Maximize that window.
In here?
Yep, maximize that. And then go ahead and minimize that one.
Minimize that one. That's very specific, Christopher.
Minimize the current window.
Minimize the current window.
Yeah.
This window.
Yep.
Okay.
I'm
done with this one.
Yeah, done with that one.
Go away.
Yep.
I was trying to remember where I stored a file earlier, so I'm suffering from that momentary lapse of trying to remember what folder something's hiding in. Yes, getting started with mobile services.
Yeah, I had your back.
All right, good man. I appreciate that. So one of the things we can do, and I do just want to warn you as well, this is another one of those ones where when I first looked at it, I was playing with it, I was working on a phone app. The integration isn't there for phone apps yet. It's there for Windows 8 apps, but not for phone apps. You can still use Azure Mobile Services with a Windows Phone app. It's just you don't have this neat little integration that we do for Windows 8. So I have a Windows 8 app here. It's a very simple app. But what I want to show you is how, if we go look in the code here, if I actually go here and I go into my Solution Explorer, so I'm going to go here and I'm going to go to my references, I can actually add a reference to Azure.
Okay.
So I'm going to right-click on the references, and of course it's not going to be there because this is how my day is going.
It's on your project.
Yes, it's on the project level, I just realized. You have to do it at the project level. If you click the solution, you won't see it either. You click the project, you go Add, and you choose Connected Service. And what this is going to do is allow me to connect to an Azure mobile service. Now, assuming I have never created a mobile service before, what I would probably want to do then is create a service.
Yep.
So I'm going to click on Create Service. And initially, it's saying, oh, well, what subscription do you want to get it from? And let's say assume I have never logged into Azure from Visual Studio before, in which case I would need to go import the subscription for my Azure account.
Yep.
So at the moment, I don't have a file with all the settings for logging in. So I'm going to have to say, get me a subscription file from my Azure account.
Yep.
So I'm going to download a brand new subscription file. And it's going to open up a Azure window so I can log in. And off it goes. So I log into my Azure account that I already have. All righty. and it's going ahead, creating my subscription file, and it's busy saying, hey, where do you want to save that? I'm actually going to save it down here. It's a little easier. And let's just save that as do-to-do, and I'm just going to shove it on my desktop so it's easy to find. So save that file, and now I can go back to Visual Studio, and I can go here, and I love the artifact from whatever tool I was using there. That's lovely. And go choose Browse. Can I get rid of that? No, I'm going to be stuck at that. We can at least move it
there
to a corner.
There
we go.
Yeah.
Let's get it out of the way. And now I can browse to my desktop and go find that file. Now, one word of warning, delete the file after you've imported it, because if someone gets a hold of that file, they can start creating apps that use your Azure account. And you don't want someone else building apps using your Azure account. So do delete that file when you're done with it.
Well, I suppose it depends. I mean, if they're developing good apps and using my account and, you know, charging for it, and I'm getting money out of it.
Yeah, maybe. I think the problem is that they're getting paid to their Windows Store account while my Azure account is being dinged for the usage.
Okay,
so
yeah.
I would watch out for that.
Yeah, that'd be bad.
Yeah. So now I'm going to give my service a name, and this is going to be, because it's classic, we have to do a to-do list, the to-do task list kind of thing. So we're going to have to-do, and, hang on, I've already got a to-do because I think I was playing with this earlier. That one okay? To-do 2, there we go. When in doubt, add a 2 to the end.
There you go.
That's how Varchar 2, I think, came to be. And then the region, since I'm in Seattle, we'll pick West U.S.
Is it char or car?
I don't know.
It's sort of like the GIF-GIF debate.
It is, an Azure and Azure.
Yeah. By the way, it's GIF. Let's just be clear about that.
Okay.
It's GIF.
So now I want to choose, like I said, I'm pretending I've never created a mobile service before and I'm new to this, so I would maybe create a new database to store everything. And I'm going to use a username of Hey Mikey, he likes it, and we'll give it a password. Had to keep up with your 80s references there. And
so you could go either Mikey or Mickey there and get two completely different references.
You could, yes. I actually work with a Mickey. He was doing a session last week on Unity and DirectX.
Yep.
So we can click on the create. So now what it's doing is it's literally going to go off and create the mobile service for me. In the past, I would have had to go to the Azure Management Portal to do this.
Yep.
So it's great that I have it right here.
And let's also keep in mind what it's doing behind the scenes. You know, sometimes people will complain, I can't believe it takes this long to build a website or this long to build a SQL Server. Okay, look, not for nothing. Have you ever installed SQL Server? Have you ever set up, everything from scratch? That takes quite a while. I go in, I hit go, I give it about a minute tops, and sure enough, it's all set and ready to go. I mean, I barely have time to go over to the break room and get a cup of coffee, and it's all set and ready to go. Again, try that with Windows and SQL from scratch,
It's true. It's absolutely true. So, yeah, absolutely has to go off and create this service.
Yeah.
And once it's created the service, what's going to happen is I'm going to be able to go to the Server Explorer, just like we were when we were looking at the Azure websites, and we're going to be able to expand that. We're going to be able to go in. We're going to be able to look at the individual services. We can even go in and create tables and things as well. So now that's done. It's created that service. And so now, if we just go take a look at the Server Explorer, we're going to be able to see Windows Azure, and we go ahead and refresh that. We'll actually be able to see our mobile service that we created, and we're going to be able to see the database that we created as part of that service, because we added it to create a database as well.
Yep.
Now, even cooler, what I think is neat, is the fact that not only can you create this mobile service, a lot of times you're using mobile services to store data, you can even create the table for the mobile service through there as well.
Excellent.
So to-do list, items, or whatever. So I go and create my table.
I was really hoping you were going to type or whatever.
Or whatever. Yes, that would work too. So it'll actually go off and create the table. And what else it will do is after it creates a table, it even creates, of course, this is an Azure Mobile Services feature, of course, it's going to create your CRUD methods so that you can have code that'll do inserts, updates, and deletes. And here I am right here in Mobile Services in Visual Studio. I can even double click on one of those methods and I can go in, I can even see and edit the code directly from here.
Excellent. I like it.
So
I like it.
The functionality of being able to do all these things isn't new, but the ability to do it all in Visual Studio is new. In the past, all of this would have had to be done inside the Azure Management Portal. So this is saving us a lot of time. Always nice when I can do things in one place.
Just stay in the tool that you're in.
Exactly.
Yeah, it just makes life a lot easier in the long run.
Don't need to hop around more than necessary.
No.
So that's some of the new stuff happening in Azure Mobile Services. So I'm going to finish up by talking a little bit about, and there's a few resources there that you might find useful if you want to try that out. Is some of the new features for JavaScript developers, because, of course, you can use HTML, CSS, JavaScript to create apps for Windows 8. And so there's new few features here, some really, it's again just a case of bringing the JavaScript editor up to catch up with what we've been able to do in .NET. So if you've been a .NET developer, you're going to go, really? They didn't have that before? No, we didn't. So yay, we have it now. So there's four different features I just want to take you through here. So we'll hop back to our Visual Studio, because again, more fun to look at it and than to just talk about it. And let's go open up a new project. Let's open up Blobs, a nice simple. This is a nice JavaScript Windows 8 application, because I need some JavaScript to play around in. And start off with simple things. The fact that when you highlight a variable, all instances of that variable are highlighted. So that basic highlight identifier capability is now added. So we didn't have that before. We also have the let statement, which is now supported inside our code as well. If I go down here and let's say I'm in my code and let's go to our, is it the open image? Yeah, this will work fine. Let's do it here. And I add some code here. The let statement is a JavaScript command, and it's one of those ones that a lot of times people have been complaining that it wasn't supported in the Windows.
Right.
So we've added it now. So very simple code. You declare a variable. The way the let statement works is if you have a block of code and you do a declare a variable j, you know, I don't know, var j, that's fine. And then we just say, you know, j equals 6. Really, really complicated code here. I just want to keep it simple to explain what the code can do. What's neat is if you declare it with a var, then I can have another variable I here, and I can say I equals j, and that's perfectly valid code.
It is. It,
but logically, as a coder, you're like, no, code declared inside a block should not be valid outside of that block.
Right, yeah, because JavaScript wants to do function-level scope. It doesn't do it based on blocks, and so it will basically just elevate that outside the block.
Right. When you use a let statement, then at that point, that variable is no longer valid when you leave the scope, and it will fail. So it's not going to give you a compile time error, but if we put a breakpoint here and we run it, it's going to crash.
Okay.
When it reaches that line of code, because when it gets there, it's going to go, J, I've never heard of this variable J when I get here. So if we actually go and we open the debug windows, for example, let's go debug windows and open up autos, you'll actually see that, hey, what's going on with I here? So you can actually see, I is, I haven't executed that line of code yet. I should be declared. J and J is coming up as undefined. Not sure why my autos isn't showing me anything here. Let's try locals. But it shouldn't matter. Somebody's law. Something has to go wrong.
Yep.
Yep. But if you go hover over J, and even my hover's not working.
There's your undefined.
There's my undefined, but it's undefined for I.
Is, well, if you put your mouse back over J, you'll notice that it's not picking anything up because it doesn't realize that it
is
anything.
Exactly, yeah. But anyway, so I step through, and like I said, it's going to crash because J is undefined. Said, whereas that works when you use the var. So that is finally supported. That's a yay, thank you for fixing that, sort of giving us a let support. But if you are a web developer, word of warning, that is supported in the higher versions of IE. So it works great in IE 11, but it's great to use in Windows 8 apps because it can work there. But don't go rushing off using it in a bunch of web apps yet because there's still a lot of browsers that still don't support the let statement.
Right.
The other new command that's been added and is now supported is the const statement. So this is one of those basic commands, declaring a constant. What a concept. I'd like to be able to do that. Months in year, right? And it's equal to 12. So you can declare a constant now. We couldn't do that before. And of course, if you try and change the value, you'll be shocked to hear that it's going to complain. Because of course, you can't change the value of a constant. So that's just one of those little things. And again, great that we have this for Windows 8 apps. It does work for web apps as well, but not supported by all browsers. So I said I love it for Windows 8, but I would be a little hesitant to start using it right away for web. Again, IE 11 supports it, but you got a lot of users out there still on IE 7, IE 8. They're going to have problems if you're using the const statement. So you'll have to do some backwards compatibility coding if you start using it for websites. And I think the other one I wanted to show was... We did the Just My Code inside the web, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, so that really sort of covers off the last of the JavaScript features. And that's just one last feature. While I'm in here, rather than hopping back and forth to the slides, I'll just show you now, is that we have this new report I want to show you, which is under our debug performance and diagnostics tool in this new hub that we have this wonderful one called energy consumption. And this is a particularly interesting one for a Windows 8 developer, because you have to ask yourself, how's this app going to work when I'm running it on a little tablet? And
right.
as developers, we're constantly running it on big laptops and PCs. So we have to go, hey, how's this going to run for somebody who's running on a tablet? How much is it going to suck up my CPU and my battery life?
Mm-hmm.
So running this report will actually come back and give you an estimate on, you know, how long it's going to drain a battery. However, one little problem, of course, it'll tell you how long to drain this battery of this machine. So the problem is you are going to need to probably set up remote debugging so you can do it against a tablet. So you want to sort of set up remote debugging on a tablet, run that report, and then you can get an idea of running this app continuously. So, you know, your Delta Airlines using the Windows 8 tablets for your staff, you want to know how long that can run without needing a recharge
yep.
for the app that they're going to be using every day. So this is a yep. great feature for that.
Very cool.
Yeah, so I think that finishes up the demos, and I can just head on back to our slides for a second.
Got
to
do the
wrap
slide
things
dance.
Up. Got to do the slide dance.
Slide dance.
Da 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 da. All right. So that's some of the new stuff out there for the JavaScript developers. And there's some of related release sources, more information on the JavaScript. There's the information about energy consumption. So currently, right now, only for Windows 8.1 apps. And some of the resources. If you do want to know how to do the debugging, there is the information on remote debugging for you as well. I will also mention, I'm not going to demo it, the Multilingual App Kit. If you are building an app, keep in mind it can be downloaded by anyone in the world, so you probably could want to translate it to multiple languages. The Multilingual App Kit will actually allow you to use the Bing translation services to help you translate the actual strings.
That's fantastic.
So it'll actually translate from American to Canadian for you. It'll add A to the end of every phrase.
And put in a whole bunch of U's.
Exactly, to all the words. But no, in all seriousness, if you have certain strings in your resource file, it will actually take, you know, hello and change that to bonjour. And then what happens is you can just get a friend to proofread it rather than asking a friend to do all your actual translation for you.
Right.
So it's a wonderful feature. It's got no charge associated with it. You get to use the Bing translation services. I think it's a fabulous little tool. There's a blog post here that tells you how to do it. There's also a great video of it does a demonstration as well.
Et ma grand-mère est flambée et le songe est disparu.
Very good. Nice Thank Eddie Izzard reference there. Well done. So that sort of wraps it up. Just that last reminder of where you can go find Visual Studio 2013. And a reminder, since this is our last presentation, a couple of other things to wrap things up.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, obviously, the all the little resources on the slide deck, go ahead and access those. You'll also notice down at the bottom here momentarily our Twitter handles. Feel free to follow
questions.
Us. Yeah, if you got questions, feel free to go ahead and ping us. We'll get back to you as quickly as we possibly can. You'll also notice we periodically tweet different tech things, different running things, and otherwise. We're always looking for new followers.
Yep.
So, but in any event, you can go ahead and find us there. Last but not least, on the main page down towards the very bottom, you'll notice the last poll. Very simple. Did you like us? Did you not like us? You'll notice down at the very bottom, just go ahead and hit that.
Yeah, what was helpful? You know, we want to know. So the next time, we can do it even better.
Absolutely. So with that, this has been a lot of fun.
Yes. Thank you very much, Christopher. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Susan. Absolutely. We should do something again sometime.
I think we should.
All
Meanwhile,
right.
Thank you, everyone, for joining, and have fun with the new version of Visual Studio.
Thanks a lot.